genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Billy the Brain, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday, from 10 o'clock, here on KKZZ AM 1400. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and our local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people have to say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, then you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right, with the emphasis on the right. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is be grateful for what you have and give back. And both my guests exemplify that. And we're going to start with a power guest. My first guest was blessed with enormous talents and skills. A gifted athlete, he broke a world record in only his fourth competition. His prowess took him to Rome to compete in the 1960 Olympics. He was named Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year in 1958. He won the James E. Sullivan Award as Top Amateur Athlete in the United States in 1960, breaking that award's color barrier. In 1994, he was elected into the first class of the World Sports Humanitarian Hall of Fame, and in 1998, he was named ESPN's 100 Greatest North American Athletes of the 20th Century. And in 2006, the NAACP named him one of the 100 most influential student athletes in the past 100 years. Rafer Johnson was born in Texas but moved to Kingsburg, California at age 9. In high school, he played the school's football, baseball, and basketball teams. A versatile athlete, he was attracted to the decathlon after seeing double Olympic champion Bob Mathias compete. He told his coach, "I could have beaten those guys in that meet." Pretty brash, but pretty cool. In 1958 and in 60, Johnson improved his world records. His crowning career came in 1960 at the Rome Olympics. Most important opponent was Yang Cheng Huang of Taiwan. And in 9 events, Johnson led Yang, but Yang was thought to be capable of overcoming Johnson in the final event, the 1500 meters. Johnson, however, managed to cling on and won the gold. But that's all his past sports history. Most notably, Rafer Johnson's philanthropic work is what he's noted for. He's the founder of the Special Olympics here in Southern California, and with talking to him off air, he's very involved in children and helping children to develop. The Special Olympics of Southern California offers year-round sports training programs and competitions for individuals with intellectual disabilities. Special Olympic programs are offered at no cost to the athletes or their families. The Special Olympics of Southern California touches the lives of over 13,000 athletes in 11 counties here in Southern California. Rafer Johnson, welcome to the show.
Bill, thank you very much. I'm pleased to be with you.
Well, we're honored to have you. You're a fine American, and congratulations on all your past achievements. But we want to talk a little bit about the Special Olympics, and we'll come to that in just a minute.
Sure.
But I want to start with the athletics side of things, because that's where you got your notoriety. You won a silver medal in Melbourne in 1956, and then of course you won the gold medal in Rome in 1960. So you've been on both sides of what was going to be my first question. In the United States, we are fascinated with winning the gold. You know, you, Mark Spitz, Michael Phelps, nobody remembers the silver or the bronze medalist. What does that say about us as a culture, do you think?
Well, I think it's a little disappointing, and you know, I know what the athlete does in winning this silver medal at the second place.
Mm-hmm.
That person puts in just as much work as the champion. He just as much focus and concerned about how he or she will perform, and they are obviously interested in being the best they can be. And when you don't win gold, it's disappointing, because gold is the, in a sense, the ultimate. So why would you train to finish in any other position? So you train to win, to be the best you can be, or better than you've ever been. But if it doesn't happen, sometimes the greatest learning lessons happen when you do lose. I lost in 1956, won in the silver, and I think between 1956 and 60, I had to change some things if I expected to win the gold, and I did make those changes. Now, I was also a little lucky. You have to have a little luck with you, and that happened. But I think we need to really kind of dig into the record books and pay attention to what athletes do, because those who finish, you know, second, third, fourth, or last have great stories to tell, and basically put in as much as the gentleman or the lady that wins the gold medal.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because I agree with you. I think the media's over-infatuation with being first and winning the gold is really overemphasized in our society. I agree. The silver and the bronze medalists both trained as many hours, and who knows, there could have been any number of factors that prevented them from being gold on that particular day. But we need to honor everybody who wins a medal, whether it's gold, silver, or bronze. So very well said, very well said. Now, another thing that is really curious for me is training in the Olympics. When you were training back in the late 50s and the early 60s, obviously there were certain training regimens that you went through and everything else, but how has Olympic training changed since you were an Olympian? I mean, were you a full-time athlete? And, you know, what are some of these new training techniques that we've got, and do they make for better athletes?
Well, I think that obviously athletes are getting better and better. You know, there was a time when they thought they, meaning the officials and those who put those organizations together in terms of who could and could not compete, they thought that the distance races were too much for women, that, you know, they might be affected in a negative way. They thought weightlifting was not very good for women. But obviously we've seen all that change, and, you know, the world has a group of female competitors who can match the men in terms of their excellence, in terms of their being the best that they could be. But I think the major changes has really been in terms of how many women are now involved as compared to men. There's also, you know, technical changes, uniforms, you know, equipment, shoes, spikes. Shoes are fitted for the athlete now, specific spike placement, and I'm talking about now about track and field. In track and field, the pits, we landed in sawdust and a little bit of sand. They now land on airbags. The techniques have changed. You know, we have the Fosbury flop, which is a much more effective way to perform that event, and athletes are performing better. They have a fiberglass pole as compared to when I first started, a bamboo or a steel, which has little or no flexibility. I mean, I could go on and on. The track surfaces have changed. The way the athletes are supported has changed. I mean, the athletes now can be a professional and compete in the Olympics. And in my day, you know, our expenses was $8 a day, and if you somehow managed to get more than that somehow with a contract, they made you a professional. Again, I could go on and on.
Eight,
probably enough, but
$8 a day.
Yeah, that was it. That was our top in terms of expenses, and you know, we got it from the AAU, and obviously those things have changed. There was no representation for the athlete in those days. Athletes were spoken or supported by whatever official thought the same way the athlete did, but the athlete really had no voice. Well, obviously that's all have changed. There are athletes in every phase of sport concerned about how we can make things better for the athlete, and they have a voice and a very strong voice. Again, I don't want to keep boring on this, because we could go talk about changes for the rest of the day.
Well, we're talking to Rafer Johnson, everybody. Gold medal winners in 1960 and silver medal winner in 1956 Olympics. An incredible athlete. Before we go on to the next question, I've got a big shout-out for Alex and Roberta. I know you're both listening out there. Thank you very much for being loyal listeners for Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Now, then, Mr. Johnson, looking at this, you could have chosen to slip away and sort of lead a quiet life after the Olympics, very similar to what Mark Spitz did. He retired into private life, and you don't hear much from him. But you chose to become active in politics and philanthropy. What is it in your personality that makes you want to take that leadership role? I mean, is it your competitive drive that makes you want to excel?
Bill, just to finish up on the last question, there's something that, though, that doesn't change, no matter what year. If you were the year of Jesse Owens, if you, which was in 36, or if you were the year of Bob Mathias in 48 and 52, it doesn't matter when you did it. The one thing that doesn't change, and that is that the desire of the athlete to be the best that he or she can be never changes. And that's the one thing that's consistent. And I'm very proud to say that I was one of those people who had a chance to to look at that fact during the course of Olympic competition. But the reason I continued to want and have the desire to be involved in youth activities, senior citizens, people who needed help in the community, was because that's how I grew up, in a very small town in Central California, a little Swedish community in the middle of the state. These people saw to it that their athletes and the student in the classroom got all the help they could get. The teachers were involved in the lives of the students. The coaches not only taught the kids in school, but were their coaches after school. I was in a very small town of 3,000 people at the time in 1945 when we moved there, and they were very concerned in the sense of given the young people an opportunity to be the best that they could be in whatever they did, whether it was on the track or basketball or in sports or in the classroom. And because I got that kind of help, I decided early on that I wanted to give something back. It became very clear to me early on that no matter what kind of talent I had, no matter how much I wanted to win, my focus, determination, the desire to work hard,
mm-hmm.
I could be good, but I was only going to be the best that I could be if somebody helped me, because that's exactly what happened. They helped me, and if they hadn't come along my side, my family, my classmates, and the people in the community, there's no way I would have been the best that I could be. So knowing that and feeling it early on, I always wanted to come alongside of men and women who were involved with the community, who were giving something back, who was making it a better place for all of their citizens to live. So my feeling about that has been very strong, and I've come alongside people like Robert Kennedy and Eunice Shriver.
Mm-hmm.
and now Maria and Arnold in this state, and it's just important to always not just wait for the opportunity to help someone, but be a little bit proactive. Look for it. I have looked for it, and I found it in many, many ways.
What a great story about community support and then giving back. We're talking to Rayford Johnson, everybody. We're going to have to take a short break to pay some bills. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit, Rayford, about your political activism, and we'll lead with that when we come back. We also have two ice cream cones from McConnell's Ice Cream that we're going to be giving away in the next 10 minutes, so stay tuned for that to win. The number here is 805-639-0008. We'll be right back.
Yolanda's Mexican Cafe has been serving Ventura County the finest in Mexican food and drink for 25 years. Visit one of their four family-friendly locations in Oxnard at 1601 South Victoria Avenue, Ventura at 2753 East Main Street, Camarillo at 86 Daly Drive, and in Simi Valley at 590 East Los Angeles Avenue. They've been voted the best margaritas, best happy hour, best Mexican food, and best salsa bar in Ventura County in a survey by the Ventura Star newspaper and the Reporter News magazine over the last 10 years. Each one of their restaurants has its own personality, with beautiful decor and also beautiful artwork. Yolanda's friendly staff is always available to assist in providing an enjoyable experience when you dine with them. Yolanda's has been serving their customers the finest Mexican food since February 1982. Please visit their website at yolandasmexicancafe.com to see the many menu choices. Come share in the experience of Yolanda's Mexican Cafe, the best Mexican restaurant in Ventura County, Yolanda's.
Attention small business owners. Did you know that you could save hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a month on your business phone costs? You want to know more? Then just pick up the phone and call Access Line Communications. You not only save on service, you can even get a complete phone system for your office at 0% financing. That's just dollars a day. Call 1-888-510-5955 today or visit accessline.com/thecoach. Tell the salesperson that your promo code is The Coach, and you'll get a free Visa gift card with your purchase. Check it out today.
Mark Twain once said, "A man who carries a cat by the tail learns something he can learn in no other way."
What you learn is just how painful a bad idea can be.
Mark and Cynthia Schneider for Pacific Air.
In this case, that bad idea is neglecting your air conditioner for another year.
Simple neglect is the cause of most expensive repairs.
Look, maybe your air conditioner can make it through another year. Maybe it cannot. But you can save a lot of money with a summer air conditioner tune-up for just $77.
When you think heating and air conditioning, think Pacific Air.
Nobody nobody likes high energy bills or expensive repairs.
Maybe you took a pass on having your system looked at last year. Then it's even more important to get it cleaned and calibrated and inspected this year.
The All Points Air Conditioner Tune-Up.
Just $77 from your home comfort connection at Pacific Air.
866-PACAIRE. And on the web at PACAIRE.com. And when you think heating and air conditioning, think Pacific Air.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Billy the Brain. You're listening to Brainstorming, and today's theme is be grateful for what you have and give back. Certainly, our first guest, Rayford Johnson, has done that. He's given back to his community based on the way he was brought up in a small community here in Central California. Before we get back to that interview, though, we have some ice cream cones to give away. I've got two ice creams from McConnell's Ice Cream here in Ventura to give away to the third caller who calls in at 639-0008, 639-0008. What makes McConnell's Ice Cream so spectacular is, well, a couple of things. First of all, it's made right here in the Central Coast of California. Secondly, it's made using the French pot method, which makes it extra creamy, and there's 17% butter fat, which makes it rich and creamy. I enjoy it, so that'll go out to the third caller, 639-0008. Now back to our interview with Rayford Johnson. Rayford, a lot of people didn't know, and I really didn't know this until I was doing the research for this interview. In 1968, and since then too, but in 1968 you were very active in politics. You campaigned for Robert F. Kennedy. You were actually in Los Angeles on the fateful day of his assassination. And you were the one who wrestled Sirhan Sirhan to the ground. Tell us about that.
Well, Robert Kennedy was a longtime friend of mine, and I made a commitment actually to myself, not to him, that if he ever ran for national office, that I would support him. And so when he did run, I actually was doing sports at NBC.
Hmm.
And because I was so closely associated with Senator, they took me off the air, which actually gave me a full-time opportunity to be with him. And on that evening, we'd gone up and down the state of California, and on that evening, I was walking, actually taking care of Ethel as we went through the door, heard the shots, looked up and saw, I thought it was balloons popping, looked up and saw smoke, and we took care of Ethel, and I started towards where I saw the smoke coming from. It was just this one person firing this gun. And I was the first one to him, putting my hands on the gun, Roosevelt Greer on top of my hand, and we basically went to the floor with him. And when the scuffling and all that ended, I asked Rosa to remove his hands. I took the gun and put it in my pocket, and that, it turned out, I totally forgot about it. Came home the next morning, put that jacket back on, noticed it was heavy, called the police, and turned the weapon in.
Oh, my
goodness.
It was
a very sad night, and one that... obviously I'll never forget.
Oh, yeah, unbelievable, being a part of history like that at the moment that it happened. And it was a fateful night in American politics as well. So, wow, what a moving story. Big shout out to Danielle. Danielle, you are the winner of the McConnell's Ice Cream. Congratulations to you. And for all the other people who called in and didn't win, that's all right. We have more McConnell's Ice Cream in the second half hour, so stay tuned for that as well. Our special guest is Rayford Johnson. He's an Olympic gold medalist. He is also very active in politics. And you've gotten involved with the Special Olympics. So tell us, I mean, you're a very gifted athlete, lots and lots of talents, not only on the athletic field, but elsewhere as well. Why did you decide to start the Special Olympics of Southern California?
Well, actually, after the assassination of Robert, I'd been involved in the Special Olympics a little before that, and I got a call from Eunice saying, we have to keep going here to do the kinds of things that keep Robert's legacy alive. And I was obviously already involved, and it seemed to be a very good place to be. And we had our first international meet in Chicago in 1968, and I've been involved ever since. And of course, Eunice Kennedy Shriver was one of my favorite people ever, because of the way she thought and her interest in making it better for all citizens, but certainly those with intellectual disabilities. And she wanted it for her sister and her family and for the rest of the world that she knew would benefit from it. She wanted them to be the best that they could be, have an opportunity to do the things that all other kids and people do. And she just said they deserve it, and we joined her.
Oh, that's great. And the legacy lives on through Maria Shriver, who's First Lady of the State of California. Are you working with Maria as well on the Special Olympics?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Maria, you know, Maria is one of the great people of the world that anyone will ever meet. And she's deeply involved in what is going on in this state and around the world. She's had an unbelievable impact on issues that concern people with intellectual disabilities, as well as people just in need, you know, boys and girls and families. And of course, has touched the women's movement in a very positive way. And I just can't say enough about her and Arnold. And, you know, I'm again, just pleased to be associated with that family who continue to do so much over the years.
Wow, that is great. Now, what has being the most visible spokesperson for the Special Olympics meant to you?
Well, again, you know, it's an opportunity to speak positively. I've had a chance to do that on a number of occasions. You know, we have 13,000 athletes in Southern California, and we want the best thing to happen to them and for them. We need people to make donations. We, you know, our volunteer level probably is 5 to 6 times higher than our athletic competitors.
5 to 6 times higher?
Oh, wow. Yeah, we have easily 4 times more volunteers than athletes are involved. That's not pushing it at all.
Wow.
We have some very good friends that have grown throughout the years in this program. And we haven't talked about it yet. I think you probably wanted to, but Chief Abner, who is in charge of our torch relay, which comes right through Ventura.
Yes, it does.
You know, they raise $1 million a year in that torch run. It's an unbelievable effort with all of the number of police officers and those in law enforcement who take part in that program. I mean, they make Special Olympics work throughout the state because they bring unbelievably great publicity, and they also raise the funds that allow this program to continue to grow after these 40 years.
No, that is great, and thank you for that plug. We were going to get to it, but the Special Olympics torch does come through Ventura, so be on the lookout for that. Now, if people are listening to the sound of your voice, Rafer, they want to get involved with the Special Olympics, how can they get involved?
Well, right in Ventura, there's a Special Olympics organization. I don't know the local phone number, but they can always log in on www.sosc.org.
That's sosc.org.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they get information on the program and when these specific activities will be held, local competition, area-wide competition in Ventura, in the Ventura area. And like I say, we have volunteers there and staff people in the area who can certainly make it possible for them to find where they would fit in best for the program.
That's great. So if you're listening to the sound of our voice and you want to get involved, check it out, SOSC, that's Special Olympics of Southern California .org, and you can learn more there as well. Rafer Johnson is our special guest, and he's talking about what he's doing to give back to the community. He grew up in a community that supported him throughout his endeavors into the Olympics and athletics, and now he's giving back as well. So, Rafer, I've got to ask you the million-dollar question. What responsibilities do celebrity athletes have to the public? And specifically, I'm thinking of Michael Phelps and the marijuana incident.
Well, sports and athletes are just a slice of life. I mean, you have all kinds of things happening, and you know, nothing really too surprising. I think Michael, like a lot of others, you know, you make a little mistake, but you know, I think we're all entitled to a little bit of that. The thing is, you don't repeat those kinds of actions. You don't. You make it possible for young people to have a chance to talk with you, and you try to be positive, and you try to present the kind of image that, you know, you'd want them to be, and you'd want your own kids to be. And I think, you know, for the most part, and I would say certainly more often than not, the athlete realizes that that they're in the spotlight, and the ones who do it right, they find a place to give something back. Because, again, I said it before, no matter how talented they are, somebody is going to break every record that they ever had. I don't care how great it is. These athletes are getting better and better by the day. So there's no ownership of being the best in the world for the rest of your life. There's no ownership of being an All-American or the highest-paid professional athlete, because someone will come along and make more money and perform better than the present athletes are doing today. Certainly better than the athletes performed during my years. But like I said before, you know, you take care of your time, and you make sure that during your reign, you do the kinds of things that your parents and your friends and your coaches and your community did for you to get you to the place you are. You give back, and you continue to give back for the rest of your life, and that's what I plan on doing.
Oh, that is great wisdom. I'm taking notes here as you're saying that. We're talking to Rayford Johnson, everybody, a former Olympic gold medalist in Rome, a silver medalist in Melbourne, and now he is the most visible spokesperson and on the board of directors for the Special Olympics of Southern California. And Rayford, I've got the address. Anybody listening to the sound of my voice and wants to get involved with the Special Olympics, the address here in Ventura is 1559 Spinnaker Drive, Ventura. Their telephone number is 650-7717. That's 650-7717 if you want to get involved in the Special Olympics. Rayford, I can't believe how quickly the time has gone. Thank you so much for this gracious interview. It has been a delight.
Well, it's my pleasure, Frank, and I appreciate it. And I heard a couple of times you gave some McConnell ice cream away.
Yes.
So send me a couple of y'all send me the address, and when I'm up that way, I'll stop in and eat some of McConnell's ice cream.
I will do that. We'll take care of that offline. Thank you, Mr. Rayford Johnson. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Bill.
What a privilege. Boy, I tell you, every day I am so